I'm David Schreiner-Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Ekaterina Walter. Ekaterina led strategic and marketing innovation for Fortune 500 brands such as Intel and Accenture. Branderati, the startup she co-founded, was acquired by Sprinklr, where she now serves as global evangelist. Ekaterina is an international speaker and author. She's a recognized business and marketing thought leader. She's a contributor to lots of leading-edge publications, both print and online, Forbes, Fast Company, Inc., Huffington Post, Entrepreneur, lots of others, including CNBC, ABC, NBC, Fox News, and the list goes on. Ekaterina, it's such a great pleasure having you on today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Great to be here.
And we've been connected online for a couple of years, and I'm so pleased that I've been able to follow you and that I'm able to have this conversation with you today. I wondered if we could start off by talking a little bit about what you're passionate about, what drives you, and also what success means to you.
Great question. I've always been passionate about two main things, and that one is my family and the other one is my work. You know, I feel so fortunate that I've received amazing support from every member of my family in kind of pursuing who I am and in doing what I love. And as well as on the professional side, you know, choosing the path that got me to where I am. I'm a passionate marketer at heart. I'm just marketer through and through. And even though, you know, in school I had a couple of majors when I finished. I majored in for my bachelor's, I majored in finance, marketing, and management. And it was sort of this immediate draw to connecting people, to figuring out what, you know, their needs, their wants, how to, you know, build relationships. And then when in my career, when social media kicked off and just started, I jumped on that train because I felt that communities, nothing is more important than communities, whether it's in your personal life or professional life, or whether you are small, you know, mom business sort of mom and pop shop, or your brand, nothing trumps building communities around sort of who you are, what you do, and what you're passionate about. So I want to say, you know, I've been really fortunate both on the personal and professional side to experience great support, learn amazing new things, create networks that sort of propelled me to take next step every single time in my life and my career. And, you know, talking about success, it's I've been thinking about it a lot lately. And last week I tweeted a quote by Maya Angelou, one of my favorites. And she said, success is liking yourself, liking what you do, and liking how you do it. And I couldn't have said it any better. I think success is first finding who you are, finding where you belong, what are you all about, and where you want to go, sort of what Simon Sinek would call your why, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Whether it's your person or your business. And then doing it in a way that you would approve of, and doing it with passion, right? So again, I think the biggest thing that we can ever hope for or achieve in life is doing what we love, because if we do what we love, success follows. So to me, that's a perfect definition of success.
Yeah, it's true. We're all on this earth for a relatively short period of time. And we can make more money, but we can't make more time. So what we do with our time is really important.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about this building community aspect and how that might tie into what people who are business leaders need to focus on to create success.
Well, remember you and I chatted about the fact, you know, we talked about who in our life impacts us, who influences us, how, and what does that mean, you know, long term. And I think, you know, it's so hard to say, oh, there's, you know, this one person. You could, and it's totally okay, right? You have mentors, you have relatives, you have colleagues, you have, you know, people around you who teach you something, whether it's, you know, good or it's maybe not so good, of a lesson that you learn from. But I believe we're all made of thousands of others. And because of that, the community element of our lives, again, whether it's, you know, the community around the church or something you're passionate about doing, or it's a school community where kids go to school, right? It doesn't really matter. Or it's a brand that you love. Those communities are essential to sort of who we are and to building our own success, to building our own person, right? So when I talk sort of communities, I talk also networks. And I personally, honestly, deeply believe that there's no such thing as a self-made man, right? That you have to have strong support system and strong network and strong community that you're part of that you can tap into to take that next step throughout your life, that ladder you climb or that path you walk. I mean, you know, it might not be a ladder, it might be a zigzag that you take in your life to get to where you should be. But I think the important element is who surrounds us? What does that support system looks like? You know, how do we build relationship with people? It's all about relationship in this life. I feel that relationship is the only currency that is out there that we need to really focus on building. Again, whether it's your personal life or you're a brand, right? If you don't build relationships with your customers, with your investors, with your employees, and beyond, you're just not going to be successful. If you don't care about people around you, if you don't lift them, they don't lift you. So that's my philosophy.
Mm-hmm. So as you've built your own community, what have been some of your successes and challenges?
Oh, there's always plenty of challenges. I have to say, I've been sort of talking on the topic of Philly and what that means, you know, for a while. And there's no such thing as just everything goes perfect all the time. But what I found out is having that skill to learn from your mistakes and don't repeat them again, or learn from mistakes of people around you and just kind of absorb that and grow from that is an essential skill. You know, challenges are a ton. I mean, I am an immigrant, right? So let's start with that. The fact that I grew up in Russia, right? Went back, it was USSR and it was, you know, it was a closed country where you didn't, you weren't allowed to learn about the world. And the fact that, you know, I've had support of my parents to look beyond just one little world and connect with people internationally and get an opportunity that I've received to come here and to study here and, you know, just being blessed, staying here and building what I am, building who I am. And really loving it, that is just, you know, anybody who says the American dream is dead is absolutely wrong. It is well and alive and kicking. You just need to reach out and get it. And so, you know, just starting from the challenges of you being an immigrant, you know, in another country and finding your path, that's one big one. But there's always challenge, right? There's the challenges of pivoting yourself and in your career as you go. And that requires an amazing skill of self-learning. I honestly believe, you know, when I interview people, and right now I'm hiring for a position, and I'm interviewing people, and I will tell you, David, I mean, I honestly think that the skill of this ability to be self-taught is the most important. Education might not necessarily matter, and, you know, how you grow not necessarily might not matter, but if you can self-teach yourself and continue to pivot to stay relevant, that is an amazing skill to have, no matter what age or gender or culture you're from, right? Like, it just doesn't matter. And so I think challenges are always there. So, you know, listing them probably won't help because everybody has their own. However, knowing how to, you know, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and then figure out how you pivot your life, how you pivot your career so that you get to that point where you could be passionate about your family, about your work, about your community around you, and, you know, and point where you can also give back, right? Because generosity is an amazing part, a huge part of you being happy as well, whether people realize it or not. That is I think that's one of the most important things.
Let's actually talk a little bit about self-learning, because it's a theme that I've heard from many podcast guests, and that the concept of creating a learning organization is a really important one, I believe, for a company to be successful. I wonder if you might talk a little bit about what it, maybe either some tips or what you think it takes to be a self-learner, and what the corollary might be to somebody who leads an organization to try to create a culture of learning in the organization.
I think, you know, we talk a lot about entrepreneurs a lot, right, David? So entrepreneurs are people who they defy convention. They go out and they create their own quite successfully, you know, some maybe unsuccessfully, but people who have this entrepreneurial spirit, they tend to be, you know, self-learners, self-doers. They just are. When you look within the company, a large company, there's a lot of people like that there. And I think companies a lot of times don't recognize it very well. So I call these people intrapreneurs. And I wrote about it in my first book, Think Like Zach, because the book is around sort of leadership and innovation and creating the culture of innovation. You know, and it's interesting that we sometimes forget to help intrapreneurs, elevate them and take their ideas who can take the organization to a whole new level and save money, whatever the outcome is, right? And bring those people up front. But that entrepreneurial streak is important. However, you don't have to be necessarily entrepreneurial. You don't have to drive an enormous change. It could be just small change that helps people do their jobs better, helps brand look at or company look at things differently. And so I think when the way to cultivate it is in yourself, if you know, if that's your question, I believe is just to find what you really give a damn about, right? Because here's the thing is, if you don't have a passion towards something, you're never going to be self-motivated. I mean, I remember most of my roles when, you know, on the brand side, and now that I'm, you know, on a more of a startup, you know, side where the culture is fast shifting and there's a lot of innovation going on, is you come into a role and there's nobody to train you in it. So if you know that you can take on roles, or you want to take on roles, even if you feel like you don't know much, you know, you're there. Everything will come as long as you have that passion, as long as you have that motivation. But the way to cultivate it is to just talk to people that are passionate about the same things around you, see what you can learn from them, spend enormous amounts of hours learning, because nowadays information already is online. But again, if you're not hungry for it, no matter what role you're in, what age you are, what background you have, it doesn't really matter. If you're not hungry for it, that self-learning will come at a slower pace and probably going to be much tougher. So finding how do you want to pivot yourself to where you will continue to stay motivated and continue to grow as a person is, I think, extremely important.
Yeah. Can you give any examples of people that our listeners might know about, or maybe just somebody you could describe who's done a great job of self-learning and pivoting a career as a result?
Oh, gosh. I'll tell you, in my first book I wrote about guys like Jake Nickel, so a guy who have started Threadless. Threadless is a community of artists that kind of rallies around the community, but also gets to create fantastic designs, and the ones that are voted most on get printed on T-shirts and mugs, and people buy that. He created this community in his early 20s without knowing anything about. He was just another artist, right? That's what he was passionate about. But he self-taught himself. I was interviewing him and he said, yeah, I was in my early 20s and I was literally Googling, how do you run a credit card? How do you create the sort of the merchandising system? How do you do X, Y, and Z, right? And he and his wife kicked it off, and then community joined, and then more passionate people came that said, look, we want to work with you and for you, no matter what it means or whatever, no matter, you know, how much money we make, we'll thrive. We'll help you clean. We don't care. We're just so passionate about what you're building and this community that you're building. And And the business is extremely successful. I mean, as a matter of fact, the business model still baffles Harvard business professors, right? Like, oh, how's that possible? We don't teach that in school.
That's actually a great example, and they have really smashed the plateau in that business, and they have broken paradigms all over the place, and yes, they've created a great community as part of it. All the things you're talking about.
But all these guys, I mean, most of the folks that came to work with him and for him as the business started growing, right? They're mostly just self-taught because they just were passionate about that one thing. The rest came because they wanted to make it happen. So that's, you know, that's an example I think a lot of folks can relate to.
Interesting. Can you give an example of, you know, when you talk about entrepreneurs in large companies, can you give an example of a company that has done a great job doing that?
Yeah, 3M is a great company. You know, everybody thinks, we talk Google and their 20% program, which I believe they shut down. But you know, for a while they gave people 20% of their time out of their, you know, week or to actually work on the projects that they're passionate about. Now, nobody knows that 3M actually created it and the program, and it's existed way longer, and the program is called the 15%, which is, that's the same concept, right? You can take up to 15% of your time to actually work on the passion projects that are not part of your roadmap or role. And a lot of engineers, I mean, Post-it notes, right? $1 billion in revenue annually, a product that brings $1 billion in revenue annually, right, is created as part of that program. It wasn't the roadmap. Nobody was looking at it. A couple of engineers got together and said, you know what? We have this issue. We have this problem. We wish we would have this type of product. And they created Post-it notes, right? So this is an example of company that says, you know, we have a lot of brilliant people internally. We want to foster that environment. And this is the program that's going to help us do it.
Yeah, 3M is a really fascinating company.
They really are.
And they're not the one that people might think about first when they talk about innovation or great leadership. But they're very interesting. Ekaterina, on the other side of the coin, what do you think prevents people from making the changes they need for their companies to thrive, whether it's a small company or a big one?
Fear, right? Fear and being comfortable. I mean, this whole idea of, you know, you look at some of the other sort of concept, business concept of how, you know, Japanese created innovation for years is they've created this environment of urgency continuously, right? To kind of spark innovation and put people on tight timelines, not necessarily the approach that might work for other cultures or every company in a sustainable way, right? But there is different approaches that people use like this. However, I feel like, you know, several things. So I think on the personal/professional level, right, fear is something that holds us back. Well, what if I'm not good enough? What if I can't make it? What if, you know, I look at all these amazing people? We talked about it, right? You know, we talked about Richard Branson and Tony Robbins and all those, you know, names that we know and how successful they are. Well, what we're forgetting is they were just regular people at some point. Nobody knew about them. Nobody knew who they were. It's just, you know, success takes small steps, one step at a time, and you get to where you want to be. I mean, I've always wanted to write a book. I've never imagined that I'm going to write my first one before I turn 35, right? I mean, it's, you know, and now I have two books out. And people say, how did you do it? And I'm like, I'm just a poor immigrant. I didn't have, you know, rich parents to back me up. I didn't, you know. So I think, you know, fear and doubt really, truly, truly hold us back. And I think on an organizational level, it's just control, you know. It's not empowering your employees enough. It's holding on to, here's our leadership structure, and, you know, I'm making a lot of money to make this company successful, so I'm going to do this by introducing a lot of processes and controls, and employees better follow them, instead of saying, hey, guys, you're all passionate about the brand that is, insert your name, right? So let's figure it out together. We're going to empower you to make decisions at your level because you're closer to the problems, you're closer to the customers. I mean, look at Zappos, right? And that's exactly what Zappos did. They, you know, Tony said, look, we're all here to build a company. Our leadership team is not beyond coming into a warehouse and helping ship boxes. If if that's what it takes. And you know what? Every single employee at every single level can go out and speak in events and promote our message, because you guys are all part of Zappos. You're passionate about who you know, there's no control. There is no, well, make sure you don't do this, you know? So I think a combination of those factors on both personal and professional level are the ones that really, truly hold us back from building something amazing.
But you know, there's a delicate balancing act between creating processes and systems to support growth, but at the same time, not making it done in a way that limits growth. So I wondered if you might be able to share some of your own perspective on these critical shift points that businesses hit when they've been successful and they need to do something differently internally to support a bigger organization, but it needs to be done in a way that it will work and not inhibit growth. Because too often companies hit plateaus when they try to create systems, they try to create processes, they try to do something different, because there's, instead of having 5 employees, they have 25, or instead of 25, suddenly they have 125.
Right. Well, you know, that's the biggest problem that businesses have: growing too fast, becoming a big bureaucratic machine, and just not knowing what to do with it. Right. You look at Facebook, and Facebook is a culture of they've always started with a culture that allowed that continuous innovation. And Zuckerberg is very, very concerned and worried about the fact that, look, as we've grown to 1,000 people, 5,000 people, you know, et cetera, you know, we're not maintaining the culture of, you know, staying on top of things, of innovation. So they've built in particular things that work for their engineers and their people, right? Like hackathons. So they you know, once a month or whatever, somebody decides to get a group of people together. They get together and they order pizza, and they work through the night creating code for some of the to fill in the gaps in the product that they feel like needed to be filled, but the roadmap isn't allowing for, right?
Right.
And then people from legal and marketing and others join them, because these are community things. These are creating a better product, creating a better company, and everybody has a lot of fun. But some of the most amazing product, literally company changing products, pivotal products that came out of it. I mean, Newsfeed was created there, you know, the chat feature, et cetera, et cetera. There is a lot of product features we can't live without that actually define and made Facebook into what they are, because people got together and said, let's get shit done, right? You know, let's just keep moving. I mean, Facebook is introducing code, whether you can see it or not, every Tuesday, and continues to update it and innovate, etc. Right? And that's the culture, that's something that works for their culture.
Right, so, that's something you wrote about.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. But the reality is, I mean, I think a lot of companies do it right. It's just that challenge of preserving the culture without becoming bureaucratic, and continues, again, empowering people at the points where decisions really, truly need to be made, versus being slow and just, it's like, you know, large companies, it's like pivoting is like shifting, you know, it's like turning the tanker. It takes so long, right?
So you're enabling your people and your teams to make decisions.
Absolutely. Otherwise, how would you?
Yeah.
I mean, I worked with a leader when I was at Intel in my Intel days, and he said this to me. He said, "My job as a manager and as a leader is to work myself out of the job." Right? And what he meant is he empowered people to the point when he leaves, and he left Intel after a while, what he's already created and put in place doesn't just fall apart because people are empowered and not afraid to make the decisions. The business keeps running smoothly, right? A lot of businesses that were built, I mean, Leah Cocker is one of the great examples that it was great. And while he was leading, it was all great. But when he left, things started to fall apart, right? That's not true leadership. That's creating a power, you know, a business around your personality or specific control structures where, you know, if you're there, things are great. If you're not there, they aren't. And that's not the way to run business, right? So
Right. Now, true leadership is it runs well when the leader steps away.
Exactly. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that.
No, they don't.
Ekaterina, I wonder if we could shift and talk a little bit about what you're working on now and what's really exciting that's coming up.
Oh, gosh. I'm excited about so many things. When I left Brandside, and I've built great social business globally for brands like Intel, and I created a startup that then sold to a larger company, and now I'm a part of Sprinklr, who I I've known Raji Thomas, CEO and founder, for a while. Once we first started using the product 6 years back. What I'm excited right now is looking, and I told you I'm a marketer, so my excitement lies in the fact of how do we transform and shift the industry to where brands finally understand, the companies realize that the pace of acceleration is so high that if you don't keep up with it, you're going to burn out, you're going to die. I mean, look at Netflix, right? Totally taking over Blockbuster as a brand dying. Kodak isn't doing very well, but GoPro, sort of is taking its place as a leader in the industry. And the list goes on and on and on, right? The beloved brands and companies on Fortune 100, 500 list are all dying out. And it used to be that the average lifespan of a Fortune 500 company used to be 70 plus years. Now it's a little over 10, 12, 15, somewhere there. So the pace of acceleration is not going to slow down. It's only going to increase. And what I'm passionate about is helping brands realize that the only way they will survive is when they keep up with who the customer is, right? 50% of population in the world is under the age of 30. These are digital natives, right? They're millennials who think differently, buy differently. Instead of buying product, they start buying experiences. They run services differently, et cetera, right? So how do you as a company give them what they need? And how do you create that community, again, not just around your customers, but around your employees, around your investors, around your vendors and partners? The list goes on. So, and how do you do that? And so in the age of social media, in the digital age, it's actually amazing how many pathways now to brand consideration and purchase there are. There's no funnel anymore, right? It's a zigzag. So what I'm really truly passionate about is helping create a platform, a sort of infrastructure that totally will define the front office and how brands engage with those people, not just customers, but people around them. And so Sprinklr is creating an experience cloud. So we're not talking customer service cloud, we're not talking marketing cloud or sales cloud, right? It's sort of how do you take that whole experience, no matter which department the customer connects with, on what channel, digital, online or offline, no matter where, at any touch point, and creating these amazing experiences consistently, in very consistent fashion, right? So only that I feel like will help brands continue to stay relevant in the age we live now, right? I mean, I heard the stats, Gartner, I think, came out with stats recently, said that in US alone, 89% of businesses will be purely competing on customer service. So.
Yeah, it's such a changing landscape.
Oh, absolutely. And like we talked about, it changes so fast, it's hard for you to keep up. So if you have a community of 1 million people and your large brand buying from you and connecting with you on 20 plus channels, plus your website, plus your retail stores, if you have those, continuously, how do you keep up with it? How do you create a 360 degree view of a customer, that profile of a customer, where no matter where he or she connects with you, boom, you have all the information at your fingertips. You're not going to be, jerking them, in between departments and saying, oh, well, it's not my responsibility. They can care less about your internal inefficiencies. What they care about is that if you as a brand don't provide great experience for me, I'm going to go to your competitor.
It's that simple.
It's that simple.
It is, yeah. But the process from the company perspective of how you connect with people, given the multiple options that there are today is seems kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, well, and it is, right? Because you have so many departments, they're all siloed, they're all fighting for some, there's always some sort of political battles internally, they're all fighting for whatever it is, you know, budget, resources, whatever, but nobody is looking, you know, picking their head up and saying, look, as a business, we have to collaborate. It's not about siloed approach anymore. And again, the customer couldn't care less about our functional dysfunctionalities, right?
They don't care whatsoever.
They don't.
And it doesn't matter whether it's a consumer customer or a business customer.
Oh, it really doesn't. And you know, now with social media, David, it's not really about B2B or B2C. It's about P2P, right? It's person to person. No matter who you connect with, you always connect, or most of the time, 99% of the time, you connect with a person that serves a particular function. Again, even if it's B2B or B2C company, it doesn't really matter. You connect with the person. So to connect with that person, you got to show them that you care. You can't show them that you care, or you can't, you know, stick to your promises of great customer care, of providing ongoing continued support. You're not going to have a customer.
That's right. You got to be authentic.
Oh, yes, you do. That's another big one. Absolutely.
Ekaterina, who do you know personally who's doing remarkable work?
There's so many people. There's so many people in the industry. You know, there is there are a number of brands and entrepreneurs within brands that have been doing some really, you know, cool things to sort of shift that mentality. And if we're talking, continue to talk, you know, marketing, social, building communities. So there's a number of people within brands that do really fantastic things. I also think that. That there are, you know, brands like Zappos that really change our view of how to lead, right? So they've instituted a flat structure, which I'm still following to figure out, you know, how that's gonna work out and if that is working out for them, and kind of look at maybe there is other way to structure ourselves to create that success that you and I are talking about today,
right?
So I think there's a ton of people. It's so hard to just pinpoint and say here's one person, but I, you know, it's if you follow sort of the industry, if you follow the people in your industry and have conversations with them, you always find remarkable people really truly driving, even if it's small change within the company and the industry.
Yeah, that's great. Ekaterina, we're running out of time. I wonder if you could tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
My website, www.ekaterinawalter.com, and otherwise it's Google. I'm active in a number of networks on Twitter and LinkedIn, etc., so you can connect with me easily pretty much anywhere.
Great. Ekaterina, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a really fascinating conversation. It could have gone on a lot longer, but I appreciate you taking the time to speak. My guest today has been business and marketing thought leader Ekaterina Walter. Thank you again, Ekaterina, for joining us.
Thank you, David. It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.